Hello there, everyone, and welcome to the Sure IDC podcast, the show about anything and everything. This is Lucas, and let's see what topic we get into today. We talk about movies, songs, video games, board games, food, books, animals, history, anything and everything you can think of. So sit back, relax, because we're just here to have a good time. Today, we are talking about a topic that may not be talked about a lot. There are a whole lot of people in this world, and sometimes people are just lost, or maybe not all there in society. We are diving deep into the topic of the criminally insane and discussing the deep thoughts around that. To join me in this conversation, you have heard from him before, and that is BMO. How are you doing today, BMO?
I'm doing great, Lucas. It's been a pretty nice day.
I know, right? Thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, glad to come back.
So, is this a deep topic, or, you know, what's your thoughts on that? And tell us a little bit about kind of your history. You know, you have to have some kind of history to have an opinion on this. So, right. Tell us a little bit about your history and whether this is kind of a deep topic or not.
Well, so it can be a deep topic, right? I mean, we'll probably, you know, go down a rabbit hole or two sometime during the podcast. But my work experience, I've worked with the Department of Mental Health for the state of Missouri. And for about 20 years or so, I worked with folks who had been labeled criminally insane, or in the state of Missouri, they often refer to them too as not guilty by reason of insanity. They're folks that have been involved in some kind of criminal activity, but instead of being found guilty or just not guilty, like maybe you and I would be if we, you know, we got in a fight and the judge was trying to decide if we assaulted someone. This would be a case where someone had done the crime, but then the courts felt like this person's mental illness played a significant role in their behavior. And if it reaches certain legal standards, then they can be found not guilty by reason of insanity. And what that means is that they did the offense for which they were accused. However, because of their mental illness, they couldn't at that time appreciate the right or wrongfulness of what they were doing. Mm. So, you know, mental illness is, it's a pretty common topic nowadays. And lots of folks, you know, suffer from mild anxiety or a little depression. That's really not uncommon at all. But there's also a group of folks who have a pretty significant mental illness. You know, and so those folks might have diagnoses like schizophrenia or bipolar or major depression. And sometimes those illnesses can be so impairing that a person might act out without really understanding what's going on. So for about 20 years or so, I kind of worked for the state, kind of monitoring those folks and making sure that most of mine were all back out living in the community, but making sure that they were doing so safely.
Hmm. So what is the level? Like, what makes someone criminally insane? Like, what is the definition? Like, what's the level that they have to reach to actually be determined that?
Right. So great question. And for your listeners, if they're in different states, this is a state by state legal issue. Hmm. And so some states have a not guilty by reason of insanity. Some states don't offer that as a defense, or some states may offer a defense of guilty but insane. So it kind of depends on where you're living. In the state of Missouri, it's kind of a two-pronged test. One, you have to prove to the courts that you have a significant mental illness. Hmm. And then two, you have to prove that at the time, the illness was so severe that it kept you from really knowing what you were doing. Those are pretty tough standards. Maybe proving that you have an illness. Maybe you were already seeing a doctor. Maybe you've already been diagnosed. And so maybe coming up with a diagnosis wouldn't be difficult. But man, you know, proving that at the time of the crime that you didn't appreciate the wrongfulness of what you're doing, that's a pretty high bar to get to. And so in the state of Missouri, at the last I recall, I believe less than 1% of the folks who attempted this not guilty by reason of insanity or NGRI defense actually get it. It's a very, very difficult thing to achieve.
That's interesting because, I mean, yeah, you're right. To prove that you were actually out of your wits or not exactly, you know, yourself at the time that the incident happened. I mean, to actually prove that, I mean, unless you had a history of that, I mean, is even that a thing?
Right. Yeah. So if you had a history of it, and maybe you were able to prove that some of your previous symptoms, you know, if you're schizophrenic and maybe you see things or hear things, you know, then maybe you felt like you were acting in self-defense. You know, if you could prove you previously had thoughts like that, that would certainly help your cause. I don't know, you're a little bit younger than I am, and so you may or may not remember, there was, in Texas, there was a mom who killed her kids. I don't know if you recall this. She strapped them in the car and then drove a car into a pond, and the kids ended up drowning. And as I recall, she originally attempted a not guilty by reason of insanity defense in Texas. And I believe that back then their laws were very similar to ours. And while she was able to prove that she was suffering from mental illness, I think her diagnosis was postpartum depression, but she was having these delusional thoughts. She was unable to prove in the original trial that she didn't know what she was doing was wrong. And the thing that caught her up was she waited to do this to her kids after her husband had left for the day to go to work. Mm. And then she did it before her mother came over to babysit the kids. And so they took that as she knew that if someone else was there, they would try to stop her. So she knew that what she was doing was wrong. Now, I think she later got it overturned. I kind of can't remember. It's been too long now. You know, but that's kind of an example of how that would come into play.
Yeah. What's the benefit of, you know, having that defense?
Right. Well, I think Missouri is actually awesome for offering it. You know, because mental illness is truly something that we don't choose, right? I mean, unfortunately, that's just a burden that some of us bear through no choice of our own. You know, they think maybe there's a genetic link. It's probably a combination of nature versus nurture. You know, you probably have, you know, maybe your genes, your makeup is set where maybe you might be predisposed. And then if you have the right kinds of stressors or trauma in your life, you know, then maybe the scales tip to where you have this significant illness. And often what we've found is that those significant illnesses start to kick in late teens, early 20s. And so, you know, we're talking young adults, and maybe when they're originally starting to have symptoms, maybe they self-medicate. You know, you see a lot of dual diagnosis where folks have started to use, you know, drugs recreationally. Mm-hmm. You know, perhaps maybe because it helps with their symptoms, you know, they're not quite sure what's going on, or they're just in denial a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, because we all know there's a stigma attached to mental illness. It's certainly improved a lot, you know, over the last 10, 15 years. But still, you know, people kind of, you know, if you said you had a significant illness, you know, people might look at you kind of funny.
Yeah.
And so people, I think, you know, they don't want to think that that's me. And so even if they get treatment and maybe they get medication and the doctor says, hey, we think you have schizophrenia, you know, I don't think that it would be so odd for any of us to say, nah, you know, I was just tripping. You know, I did this or I did that or, I've been up too long, you know, and try to deny it and kind of talk ourselves out of it. And what happens is sometimes for folks who have the illness pretty severely and the symptoms can get very severe, you know, they might commit some kind of offense, you know, including I've had people who have killed people. But after that happens, if they were truly so sick that they didn't really understand what they were doing, you know, is the right thing then to throw them into a prison, you know, with a bunch of criminally minded folks? Or, you know, in the state here, what we end up doing, the courts end up remanding them to the Department of Mental Health. They go into one of the state's hospitals. And if the illness can be treated, then they treat the illness. And, you know, if it is controllable, then under certain circumstances, just like someone who gets out of prison on probation, they might release the person to live in the community as long as, you know, they're seeing their doctor and taking their medication, making sure that they do the things they need to do to keep their illness under control. But I think it's a great thing. I really don't think that throwing folks like this in prison would be the right thing, would be the humane thing to do. Now, family victims of family members or the victims themselves might disagree. You know, they might say, well, you know, crazy or not, they still committed the crime. And there is some truth to that. But I think if we're going to be a humane society, I think it's the right thing.
Yeah. Man, there is so much here. There is just, you know, there's so much to unpack and everything, you know, and there's just a lot of layers, a lot of aspects to this. And it's not a topic that, I mean, I didn't lie at the beginning of the episode, you know, it's definitely not a topic that is talked about. And I'm just kind of curious on, you know, your thoughts on mental health and everything. I mean, because that's something that fascinates me. I don't talk about it much, but especially in my time period, you know, in my life, you know, mental health has been, it's become normalized, like you said, but at the same time, it's not talked about, I feel like.
Yeah. We're not quite 100% where we want to be yet.
Yeah.
But like we've improved a lot. But, you know, Lucas, if you go back, you know, it's really kind of in our lifetimes that there has been significant changes to the way that we can treat mental illness. It used to be back in the day that about the only option you had was to drop off your family member or your loved one at one of the state institutions, and they were pretty much just warehoused. You know, nobody really knew what to do with them. And of course, some of them might be dangerous. Some of them might not, you know, but literally like here in St. Joe, you know, say if you had a kooky aunt, you know, you could pack her up in your car, throw her stuff in a couple of suitcases, drive out to the state hospital and just drop her off and leave her there, you know, and she would get committed and maybe never get out of the hospital again. I mean, we look back on it now and we think, gosh, that's crazy. How could we have ever done that? But we did. Then they found some medication, Thorazine, that would kind of help keep some symptoms under control. But what it really became was just kind of a medical restraint. You know, it would dole a person and medicate a person so much they wouldn't act out. But they also didn't have a chance to really experience life at all. Hmm. But then in the 90s, pharmacies began to have some breakthroughs and come up with medications like Haldol that could treat schizophrenia and knock the symptoms out. And a lot of people, for a lot of them, it was truly miraculous. And ever since then, there have been, you know, additional significant semi-miraculous improvements in medications. In addition, during that time frame, kind of in the 90s when Reagan was president, there was a big movement across the country to deinstitutionalize folks. They really recognized that that model was a crappy model and it didn't really work. Yeah. You know, it was semi-inhumane. And that a lot of these folks, especially with the new medications that were coming out, could be treated in the communities. And so there was this huge shift. For example, the state hospital here in St. Joe, I believe in its heyday, it had close to 4,000 people being warehoused there.
Gosh.
I know. And now it's 108.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and you know, mental illness hasn't gone anywhere. It no. just means that the opportunities for different kinds of treatment are there. And so people aren't having to be warehoused. So, you know, I think that's part of it, is that back then nobody really knew what to do with it. And I think just as human beings, we're hardwired to be skeptical and make fun of things we can't understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's a safety mechanism from back when we were cavemen. You know, we didn't know, I don't know what's on the other side of the hill, and so I'm not going to go there, because if I do, maybe there's a dinosaur that's going to eat me, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's just part of human nature. But since, you know, the 90s or so, with a lot of these improvements, we're actually seeing people get treated and be able to live, you know, pretty normal lives.
Yeah.
But I can remember when I was in school still running into people that thought, oh, that's all a bunch of hooey. It's like, have you ever seen anybody that, you know, it's really, really, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, I have.
Well, that is fascinating, because, I mean, do you really, and you might not know this, but like, do you really need medication to solve some of these mental health issues? I mean, like, obviously it helped a bunch going from 4,000 to 100. I mean, they obviously didn't find any other solutions to help with these, you know, symptoms.
Well, there are different people have different opinions, right? I mean, I remember the big flap Tom Cruise got himself in when he was talking to Brooke Shields. She was having postpartum depression and seeing a psychiatrist. And he had a different point of view on how she should be treating her depression. Personally, I can tell you that I believe that mental illness is a real thing. There really is mental illness that's very significant, you know, that people really struggle with. And I've seen people's symptoms really improved with medication. So if you're looking for an endorsement, I would give my stamp of endorsement that if somebody's struggling with their mental health, they really should go see a doctor or a counselor. And if the counselor recommends for them to see a doctor and maybe take some medication, I would recommend for them to strongly consider it.
Yeah.
You know, if nothing else, you know, sometimes if we're struggling a little bit, if you think of it like your car battery is worn down, you know, maybe every now and then you have difficulty getting your car to start because the car battery is going bad.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you need a new battery, but sometimes at least getting you by, you can just charge that battery up a little bit, you know, hook it up, give it a little extra juice. And that can at least get you to a spot where you can get the car repaired and get it tuned up better. Mm-hmm. Well, to me, that's an analogy for medication. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you need a little more than that. Maybe you need some counseling or to identify what it is in your life that's causing you this anxiety or this stress. But sometimes medication can be that charge to your battery that can get you to the point where then maybe you can do some self-improvement.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I was just curious your thoughts on that, because, I mean, you and I, me studying what I did in college, you know, studying, I think I studied for a year and a half, 2 years, psychology and everything. And we both kind of know the history of mental illness and what they did. I mean, you were warehouses and stuff. I mean, even back before that, it was even worse, because they actually tested on people and they did weird things.
Well, you know, here in St. Joe, they've got the Glore Museum, the Glore Psychiatric Museum, and it's supposed to be one of the 10 strangest museums in the United States. I think NPR even did a documentary on it. And you can go through and they still have, for example, all the items that a person who would swallow things. And they've got this whole slew of things that this person had swallowed. But you can also see other treatment methodologies, like they would put them in a sweat box and they think that somehow by exposing them to this high heat and having them sweat a lot, it would sweat out the mental illness. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. But if anybody's ever in St. Joe and you have to have a stomach for what you're going to see a little bit. But yeah. If you're into the macabre a little bit, it's a pretty cool tour.
Yeah. I mean, just studying about those insane asylums and just, you know, I mean, there's a reason why they're like the number one visited spot for ghost adventures.
Right. And they do that. They do the ghost thing at the Glory Museum, too.
Oh, do they?
They do. They go and stay all night.
I mean, just I mean, whether you believe in ghosts or not, this isn't a ghost podcast. But like, I mean, just imagine
what happened there.
Yeah. It's just creepy. Just researching it, you don't really want to dive deep into it because you won't find happiness.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes the folks with whom I worked, you know, didn't do serious things. Yeah. Like I had a person who was really confused and they hijacked a bus with a cup of coffee. You know, they just threatened, you know, it was such a silly thing that the bus driver just kind of went along, you know, with the person because they could tell that this person was under distress.
Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't fear that that she was going to throw her coffee on them. So they kind of just went along and passed the hat and people collected some change and let her off the bus. So sometimes it's fun stuff like that. Sometimes it can be serious too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, I mean, and that's the thing about it is they were all grouping them together. Even today, we probably group them together as well. I mean, if you're depressed, insane, you know, if you're impressed, schizophrenia, whatever, you know, you are probably grouped into the same bucket, but we're finally starting to, you know, separate the illnesses. And you're right. Some things are not as serious as other things. I mean, it's almost like, you know, it's funny me thinking this. It's almost like, have you ever seen The Beautiful Mind?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, there's so much that you see on movie and TV that I think it kind of, I mean, I don't know. We can talk about this a little later in the topic, but I don't know if it brings awareness to it or if it makes people scared of it.
I'd say oh, all of that. Yeah.
All the above.
All of that. You know, you see a Silence of the Lambs, you know, kind of a movie.
Yeah.
And you know, I had a guy who, was low mental functioning, but they also had a significant mental illness. And when he got sick, he got very paranoid. And sometimes schizophrenia, a person might have symptoms where they'll hear voices, you know, like, and sometimes the voices are just like murmurs or like when you and I are in a crowd, you can make out the voices, but it's also hard to make out anything they're specifically saying, you know, but sometimes they can understand exactly what the voice is saying. And sometimes the voice might even command them and say things like, you know, Lucas, you know, BMO is trying to kill you. You need to defend yourself. You need to do something. And my guy was having those kinds of voices in his head about his wife. And so in the middle of the night, one night, he killed her. Well, after all this happened and he was arrested, ended up going to the hospital and they got his illness under control and he found out what he had done. I mean, he was just distraught, you know, because he realized he had killed his wife. You know, so that's awful. But, you know, so like Silence of the Lambs, that situation, it's not impossible. You know, the pretty serious and dire things can happen, but not always, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully somebody gets treatment before it reaches a level of that.
Yeah. I mean, there's two sides to everything. I mean, you know, there's good situations, there's bad situations, there's severe issues, there's not, you know, not as severe issues. And it's just, it's very sad to hear that and you know, you don't ever think about the person in the sense of, you know, feeling remorse for the person that did it because they did it, just like you said earlier. You know, people don't think about that. People don't think, oh, they didn't know what they were doing, because it's just such a horrific thing that it was kind of like, well, how did they not know what they were doing?
Right. And we want to blame somebody. Yeah. Right. I mean, we usually want, you know, when the football team doesn't win, you know, we want to blame somebody. You know, when something bad happens, we want to blame somebody. It makes us feel good. Yeah. You know, I think maybe it gives us a sense of security or safety. You know, if we can pin the blame on that guy over there, you know, if that guy did it. If we can punish him, then that's not going to happen to me. You know, kind of a thing.
Yeah, so, not to throw in a musical, but it's like Into the Woods. Yeah. You're the one to blame. You're the one.
right.
But
exactly.
I'm you know, I'm sitting here thinking, and I think the only thing that I'm thinking about while we're having this conversation is what makes someone, you know, what is going on in that person's brain, you know, with the, you know, the neurons and everything, and you know, what exactly is going on?
Well, so I had another guy with whom I worked, and he was hearing voices. He thought he could hear kids calling for help. And so he was at home and he thought that it was at a neighbor's house. And so he didn't know what was going on, but he thought he could hear these kids screaming and calling for help. So I grabbed a gun and went over and banged on the front door because he was going to help the kids.
Yeah, no. Well, okay,
spoiler, so it all turns out okay before.
Okay, good. I hope so.
So he goes and he bangs on the door, and of course, there are people home, but then they see their neighbor standing out on the front door with a gun, and so they're like flip-a-doodle because it's like, what the heck? Why is so-and-so, and, you know, I'll call him Joe, why is Joe at the front door, you know, holding a gun? So they don't answer the front door. Well, then that kind of flips our guy out more, right? Well, to make the long story short, there were no kids screaming for help inside. It was just in his head. And you also have to give him a little bit of credit. Probably the smartest thing would have been to call the police, you know, or call the sheriff and said, hey, you know, I think I hear kids calling for help next door. What should I do?
Yeah.
But I do, you know, gosh, if I was in trouble and I was in my house and I was calling for help, I'd appreciate if my neighbor came and tried to help me out, right? Yeah. And so he and I were talking one day, because that turned out okay, other than, you know, he did get found not guilty by reason of insanity for what he did, but nobody was injured. And he found out that he had this mental illness, and it was pretty significant. Prior to that, he had had some symptoms and got treatment and then went off his meds, and he would go a while, and then we'd start getting symptoms and get off his meds. So this was kind of the final straw for him where he could actually have insight and say, holy cow, I guess I do have this because I almost hurt somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking one day. And so I said, Joe, I said, what is it like? You know, what's it like when you're hearing voices? And he said, you know, kind of looked at me like I'm an idiot. And he's like, well, it's like you hear a voice. I'm like, well, yes, I get that. But I mean, you know, is it like on TV? Is it like you hear something on the radio? And he's like, no, it's like you and me talking. And if I heard the voice, I would turn and expect to see someone standing there talking to me. He said, it's real like that. Hmm. I was like, wow, gosh, that would be so hard. You know, to be able to differentiate what might be real and what might be a symptom of your mental illness.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was really good guy. He's not with us anymore. But he was really nice to talk to, really insightful. You know, he was able to share and kind of describe his symptoms in a very educational way.
Yeah. That still just makes me, I mean, it's got to be somewhere in the brain. I mean, it just has to be, right? I mean, it has to be.
Yeah. So schizophrenia in particular, there is kind of a locale in the brain where they see that happening. And it also is near the area of the brain that processes religion. And so I don't know if you've ever seen, but often in movies, it's a stereotype to portray someone who's mentally ill, schizophrenic, as thinking that they're Jesus.
Yeah.
Right? But that's that stereotype comes with, they're often folks who suffer from schizophrenia, not all the time, but often they can have a religious component in their thinking. You know, that either they are Jesus or there's some kind of a second
kind. An angel.
Or the gal that I referenced earlier in Texas that killed her kids, she had a religious component. She thought that God had told her that if she killed her kids, it would absolve the world from sin. And so she was kind of willing to make that sacrifice, you know, that if she got rid of her kids, then that would save everybody else on the planet. So there was kind of a religious component to that, too.
That is crazy. Like, I can't even wrap my mind around it. Like, that didn't answer any questions. That just led to more questions.
So my mom, sometimes, you know, we'd be talking and you know, you know your parents are. Yeah. In her very naive way, she would say, you know, she's like, well, Bimo, why do they do that?
Yeah.
And I'd say, well, yeah, Mom, that's the point.
Yeah.
You know, is that most people wouldn't do that. That's what makes it an illness, you know?
So. Yeah. I mean, you just, you know, how many people are out there right now, you know, you even yourself, you know, trying to figure out what makes someone tick, you know, what makes them hear the voices that they, it obviously in their head, but it's not in their head to them.
Yeah. You know, and by the way, before we do too much us and them, you know, this stuff is very much on a continuum. You know, it's not like a light switch that's either on or off.
It's not. Yeah.
And all of us have a little flavor of something, you know, and also, you know, sometimes people will say, well, you know, I'm feeling a little bit of this or I'm a little bit of that, you know, am I crazy? And, you know, usually my answer would be, well, yeah, you probably are a little bit, but is it diagnosable? You know, is it to the point where it's impeding your ability to hold a job? Is it impeding your ability to have a family, you know, to have relationships? That's when you start to think, you know, maybe this is an illness that needs treatment, you know, because all of us have a little bit of something. All of us get depressed. Yeah. You know, when you lose a family member, I mean, it would be unusual if you didn't get depressed. You know, it's very, you know, you should. So, you know, we all go through really difficult things. But, you know, significant illness is something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just interested in how, why. I mean, like, and not just saying, well, why does that happen? But, like, actually trying to understand not just why that happens, but like why that has to happen.
Well, that's the $20,000 question though, right?
I know, right? That's what this podcast is all about, to get the answers we deserve. Right.
Well, the answer is there is no answer.
Bimo, surprise, right? But I had you on the podcast to solve the mental health issue
pretty much.
So we have to solve it in the next 20 to 30 minutes. So.
Well, let's solve the stigma of it. How about that?
We'll
at least get people to be more compassionate and understand, you know, that this is something often that's beyond people's control.
Yeah.
You know, we really, even with all the improvement that we've made since the 90s, we're really only treating the symptoms of it.
Yeah.
You know, we're really not attacking the root cause of it.
I mean, that is pretty incredible that there are medications out that can stop the cases of schizophrenia or the symptoms of schizophrenia.
Well, if you think about it, like diabetes or high cholesterol, you know, we're, as a society, we're completely cool with saying, oh, somebody's diabetic and they got to take their insulin for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
You know, but then we don't think, wow, that's weird. Yeah. You know, or somebody, you know, has high cholesterol, you take your pill. My doctor diagnosed me with high cholesterol. And so he's like, I want you to take this pill. And I'm like, yep, but won't I have to take this for the rest of my life? And he's like, well, yeah. He goes, you know, people live a long time now. And I said, well, I know that. And he goes, you know why? And I said, no. And he said, because they take their pill. That's like, okay. But, you know, you don't say, ooh, Bimo someone's got high cholesterol, I don't know if I'm going to invite him over to supper.
Yeah.
You know, but mental illness, for some reason, you know, still carries a strange stigma, maybe because, you know, people act unusually, they act odd, and maybe it's just not been enough time, you know, because since it's just in our lifetime, you know, not enough of us have been around long enough that it seems normal.
Yeah.
But it's getting normal. You know, there's even a musical, you know, Next to Normal.
Yeah.
That addresses mental illness in a family. A great show, won Best Musical of the Year, and won a Pulitzer Prize.
Wow.
As a show. Yeah. Yeah. Very moving.
Well, when did that come out? Do you remember?
90s, maybe? 2000s?
Wow. Don't remember. Yeah. So around that 10, 20...
Yeah.
20-year ago mark?
Yeah. It would have been around that time frame. Somebody's going to correct us when they listen to the podcast. They think those guys are idiots. They don't know.
Well, you know what? I won't even let them correct us because I'm going to look it up.
Correct ourselves. Well, while you're doing that, I'll say that, you know, in that show, it's about a family unit, and the mom has a significant mental illness, and the show's about her struggling to try to control it and find a way to control it. And, you know, she is getting to experience what a lot of us that are in the field already know. And that is that, you know, there's no magic bullet that even with medications, you know, sometimes, you know, medication A will work for somebody, but it doesn't quite work as well with someone else. Mm-hmm. But maybe for them, medication B works better. You know, or maybe somebody else, a little bit of medication A and a little bit of medication B combined work the best.
Yeah.
And so while doctors can be really good about figuring out a diagnosis and figuring out what the illness is, putting a label on it so that we can understand it, sometimes actually treating it is a little more art than science.
Yeah.
And so in this particular show, you get to witness her struggles. And then, of course, the struggles of the family as they're trying to, you know, live with mom and work with mom and support mom. And I won't talk about how the show ends because it's
no spoilers.
It's really, yeah. I won't spoil it because it's really worth seeing if somebody's not seen it.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very moving theatrical piece.
Yeah. Looks like it's 2008.
2008. That sounds right.
Even though it says it was originally published in 2010. So
curious.
It says Next to Normal is a 2008 American rock musical.
Yeah, modern, it's contemporary music.
With a book and lyrics. And then it says originally published in 2010, so. Yeah. So you were right.
Yeah. You know, and it's her portrayal. I know that the writers of that worked really, really hard at trying to portray her illness very accurately.
Yeah.
And a lot of the dialogue, the book that was written, I know that they went into great detail to try to make sure that they were accurately describing the medications and symptoms, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I think often in movies and TV shows, I think for the most part, at least nowadays, you do get a fairly fair representation of what mental illness can be like. Now, sometimes it's just the stereotype. Junk.
Yeah.
But one of the best ways, while I say that, I will also come at it back with a caveat. So I worked with a guy, he had a mental illness, but his was drug induced. He had been doing meth and had done so much meth for long enough that it was causing him to have this psychotic break. And so that's why I had ended up hooking up with him. But he had also done time in prison. And so I asked him once about, you know, kind of movies and how things are portrayed and mental illness and prison, you know, because we have all seen the prison movies where they're always fighting and people get killed and, you know, all this violence and stuff. And so he told me, he said that in his experience, he goes, movies, he goes, he was in prison, I'm thinking maybe 10 or 15 years, somewhere in that window. And he said, probably in my 10 or 15 years that I was there, I did witness almost everything that you would see in a movie. But he goes, on any given day, nothing ever happened and everybody got along just fine.
Yeah.
He goes, the only difference is when you see it in a movie, they condense all those bad things into like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, where he said, from, you know, if you were actually in jail, it might take 10 or 12 or 15 years to actually witness all that stuff. And so he said, yes, it's true, but it's also not exactly portrayed accurately, because the way that it's portrayed is it's like this every day, or, you know, every other day you're going to see something horrific happen.
Yeah.
Well, and I think mental illness in movies is often that way too.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the symptoms of the things you see and the way people are portrayed, probably for the interest of the movie goer, and because they've got to push the storyline along in two and a half hours, you know, they throw a bunch of this stuff in where all of it is maybe true, but in real life, it would take an extended period of time for somebody to experience all of that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was just about to say was, I mean, it would kind of be boring if they did a TV show about prison and they had normal days there where nothing happened.
Right, who buys that ticket?
Yeah, it's all like, oh, that was a good episode. I mean, we always hate it when it's just, you know, character development.
Right, we go to see Top Gun and nobody has done anything bad. So they all just sit on their Air Force carrier thing.
Yeah.
You know, they don't do anything and they play cards. It's like, that's not very entertaining.
It's like, wow, okay, well, I'm glad I
rescue somebody or blow up something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I definitely think that, I mean, going back to the stigmatism of it, I think that kind of fuels it in a sense. I mean, if you think of all the shows and mental illness, I mean, even the show Criminal Minds, I mean, like, I know so many people that have seen that show. I've watched the show, you know, mm-hmm. several times through, but I mean, there's just, you see it so much in shows and movies that I think that very much, you know, contributes to the stigma, you know, whether it helps it, whether it hurts it. I think it just depends on the person and the situation and what they're watching. But yeah, I mean, you're right. There's just, you know, it's nothing's wrong with getting help.
Right.
You know,
right.
whether you have a mental illness or not.
Right.
You know, and if you just have other problems.
And if you get help, even if you do have a mental illness, you know, for the folks that are fortunate where medication, and I knew a lot of them where the medication was just super effective. You know, just like my medication is for my cholesterol. And so walking around at Walmart, you're not going to look at me and say, but that dude has high cholesterol. Well, you might, because I'm fat. But other than that, you might not say, well, that dude looks like he's, you know, he's got an illness. I bet he's got high cholesterol. You know, there are lots of folks that have, you know, mental health issues that get medication, get treatment. Then it knocks the symptoms out. They're fine. You know, they're just like you and me. You know, there's no reason to think any differently or treat them any differently.
Yeah. Yeah. Just got to take a little bit more time to push it along.
Yeah. Things are improving.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we're not throwing people in warehouses anymore.
Right. Right. And we're not doing crazy stuff to them. So, you know, that, I mean, really, since even the 40s and 50s and 60s, I mean, there's been so much improvement in the mental health field. We're not where we want to be yet, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
I mean, this might be a very obvious question, but do you think, you know, and we're kind of close to wrapping it up here now.
Yeah.
Still a little bit, but do you think that the definition of mental health has changed?
At
any point in time?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, well, sure. I think people are much more willing and able to openly talk about, you know, struggles that they're having, you know, and of course, since COVID, there's been a big increase in anxiety and things, you know, when people were, there was a big increase of suicide rate, you know, during COVID because people were home and some people, for them, that was a very bad combination, you know, being trapped at home, not being able to get out. And so I do think that society has opened up and it's much more common for people to come forward and say, I need help. You know, probably the one specific area that still needs a lot of improvement in that area are guys like me, the middle-aged white guy, you know, because we tend to think, no, I'm fine. I'm not going to do it. I don't need any help. you know, and I think that specific demographic could really needs to kind of recognize that a real man can ask for help, you know, mm-hmm. But generally speaking, yeah, there's just been so much improvement lately that I think that when you think of mental health, you know, it's not just, oh, well, take this pill and go away. You know, there's counseling, you know, there's helping, there's education, you know, there's also the medicine too. But gosh, it's very much this holistic kind of multifaceted approach to try to help people. And of course, there's also, you know, a big movement to try to understand why these things are happening, you know, and there's a big movement right now that is focusing on trauma, you know, that mm-hmm. they feel like, you know, a lot of folks who suffered significant trauma early in their life, why I talked earlier about the nature versus nurture,
yeah.
you know, that maybe they had some predisposition, but then they had this significant traumatic event that kind of tipped them over. But if they can get the person to see that and understand that, you can maybe then help them to better get past that, you know, to a more normal life. So, yeah, I think there's been a lot of improvement. And there's a lot of dollars, I think, from the federal government and in the state of Missouri, too, that's getting pumped into, like, mental health clinics and treatment mm-hmm. centers and things so that there are places where people can go to get help. Now, there's not enough. I know, especially out in the rural towns, you know, often there are no mental health clinics, and so sometimes it's hard for them to find treatment out there.
Yeah.
But gosh, we're getting better. We're getting
yeah.
better.
Yeah. Now, question for you, hot take right now. Is there a negative side to all of this? At all?
Wow, let me think a minute.
Yeah, like I said, hot take.
Yeah, I want to be thoughtful in my answer.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure that there is.
Yeah.
I suppose one maybe could maybe try to make an argument. If you want to make an anti-treatment argument, would be to not be so reliant on external things,
mm-hmm.
you know, like medication. Maybe we could conquer the illness ourselves. For example, I think you mentioned the movie earlier, Beautiful Mind.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, the lead character in that refused to take medication. He didn't want it.
I believe so, yeah.
Of course, you know, you also have to understand that his illness wasn't so severe that he was wanting to hurt someone else or himself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's different too, you know. And Tom Cruise, you know, he felt like, you know, I can't remember what he referred to psychiatry as, but if I recall, it was something like hooey, you know, it was kind of nonsensical.
Yeah.
And so I suppose that there is some truth to, you know, we do need to figure out how to heal ourselves and get along with ourselves. But at the same time, especially if an illness is significant,
mm-hmm.
I think it's ridiculous to just refuse any kind of external treatment based off of some kind of an ideology of, well, I ought to be able to cure myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't do that with my cholesterol. You don't do that with diabetes. Mm-hmm. So why should we treat mental health like that and think that we're, you know, less of a person or whatever for not having some kind of medical treatment?
Yeah. I just had to throw that wrench at you.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that there's a downside. You know, the only downside is that we don't know enough yet.
Yeah.
You know, once we know more, you know, if we can actually figure out what's causing it, then we can actually treat the illness itself.
Yeah.
And that would be better.
Yeah. Still a lot more growing. Still a lot yeah. more learning. I just yeah. wish I knew why. Just why?
Right.
But no, I mean, is there, I mean, you kind of wrap, I mean, that was a good final last question, but do you have any other last thoughts or anything, or anything you've been wanting to say throughout but didn't really get to it or anything?
Oh gosh, let me think here. Let me think if I can come up with a really good story. Let's see here. So this is kind of serious, but not. I mean, the guy didn't hurt anybody, but this guy probably had mental illness in his family. Lived in a very small rural town, and he had a little flavor of mental illness. But they lived very poor, very meager existence. And by meager, I mean kind of a shack on the hill with a dirt floor. You know, didn't even have a floor, no running water. And the neighbors always treated him kind of like the hermit on the hill, and they would bother him and pester him. And ultimately, I think they kind of wanted his farm. You know, I think they wanted the acreage. And so one day he went out and he shot his gun in the air. They had come onto his property and they were doing something to harass him. And so he shot his gun in the air to scare him off, you know, say, get out of here. You know, I'm going to shoot you. And he shot his gun in the air to show that he meant it. Well, he ended up getting arrested, ended up losing his farm, you know, and he got, you know, put into the system, and he ended up dying in the system. So, you know, he never, ever got to see his freedom again. So I guess the moral of the story is we still got miles to go before we sleep.
That was definitely a sad story.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
You were like, this is not a bad story.
Well, I was going to do a funny one, but then I thought, well, then that came to mind, and it's more meaningful.
Yeah, yeah. There's, and I think you said it, you know, very well earlier. Everyone has issues. You know, everyone has things that they're going through, whether it be you're hearing voices in your head, you're depressed, major depression, or, you know, maybe just a little depression. You're not happy with your life or how it's going or your job or, I mean, just even that stuff. I mean, everyone is going through something. And we just have to understand and see that people are going through things and, you know, try your best to, you know, work with them, be patient with them, and get them the help that they need. I mean, how many people do you know and that you know of that, you know, don't want help?
Yeah, not very many. I think, you know, generally speaking, none of us wants to, you know, struggle in life. We all want to lead a normal, happy life for us and our families. Yeah. Which, by the way, you know, if somebody's listening to the podcast today and if they are struggling, you know, and they're feeling down, they're feeling blue, they're questioning what they're doing here, they should call and get help.
Yeah.
There's a suicide prevention line that's good. It's an 800 number. It's good all across the United States.
Yeah.
So anybody that's listening to this anywhere in the United States can call this number and they will talk to you. You know, these are people that understand their situation and can help them out. The number is 800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255.
Yeah. I mean, definitely 100%. And, you know, if you're feeling, you know, what BMO said, you know, for sure, people are there. I mean, people are there to help you. And not to self-promote anything, but I did do a podcast, I think last season, about counseling. And
awesome. Kind
of, and talked about, you know, what about counseling? And we talked about the stigmatisms of how it's bad to go to counseling, good, and what we know what there is to offer there. And so, you know, if you're curious about that too, go listen to that. You know, self promotion there. But I think it was a really good conversation. I had it with one of my old psychology professors, who is a counselor, and it was a really good conversation. So if you're also curious about that, go back, listen to that. I'm pretty sure it was last season. I'm pretty sure it's titled What About Counseling? So we're here. They're there. If you need help, get it. So thanks for being on the show, BMO. I really appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Love you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for having this conversation. I know it was not a well-known discussion.
No. And, it, you know, there's some sadness to it, but gosh, it takes a village. So the more that we all understand, you know, about each other's struggles, the better human beings we can be to each other.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, just kind of to to end on this is, you know, we talked about, you know, the bad stuff and how there are bad stuff that happens, but just think of how many people that it actually helped.
Yeah.
You know, all the good stuff that has come out of it.
Right.
Just, you know, prime example, the local rehabilitation facility went from 4,000 to 100.
Yeah.
Just saying. So thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate it, BMO. And thank you for listening, you listeners out there. Shows come out every 2 weeks on Thursday. You should follow me on Facebook and YouTube. So thanks for listening. Stay safe out there. And remember, you don't care.